Okay, so last night I got to watch the fight between D. Reddick and Sam Klepak. And let me tell you, man, Conflict 61 had some interesting teams on it, had some good fighters I didn't know. I liked the format, elbows, especially it was almost primarily Muay Thai rules with the elbow pads on, no shin guards, which I loved. And guys came to fight in almost every fight, but there were some distinguishable fights, and D. Reddick and Sam Klepak being one of them. Let me just tell you, like, from my perspective, you know, I had done an interview with D. Reddick, and, you know, we talked about him not having the same level of fight experience. You know, we knew about his wrestling, but not the same level of fight experience. And you watch enough fights and you see the strategy, or you learn the strategy. You know, you got this wrestling background. I'm not going to let you take me down, and I'm going to beat you up. And that is generally the formula, the format that tends to work when you can do it. Matter of fact, we're watching the UFC fight. Rani Yahya. Couldn't take his opponent down. I think the guy's name was Henry. Couldn't take him down. And the guy beat up, because that's the formula. If the guy can't take you down, you can let your hands go. You can just be free-willing, you know, pretty much just unleash the beast, so to speak. And you would think that general conventional wisdom would say, well, that's what Sam Klepak's going to do against D. Reddick. It did not exactly work out that way. Henry got a different fight in the UFC last night. D. Reddick stood his ground. D. Reddick backed him up. D. Reddick came to fight. So where was the difference? You know, one of the differences is this. Everybody's sleeping on bare knuckle boxing. Bare knuckle boxing isn't celebrity boxing. Bare knuckle boxing isn't something that MMA fighters just go over and do when they're retired. It's a system. If you look at it, you can tell that it's starting to creep into other formats. You can tell that it's got its own methodology and ideology. And D. Reddick trains with one of the world champions in bare knuckle boxing. I mean, he has access to other bare knuckle boxers like Tony Locosoto. So you can see it in his style, which is good, because he doesn't have that previous striking background that says, oh, you must do this or you fight like that. You can see him do little things that a bare knuckle boxer would do. And one is that forward pressure. And two is really attack the high and the low and the volume. This is built into his style. It was quite evident, and I noticed it. And, you know, I've often thought of D. Reddick's style as being an old Tito Trinidad who stands a little bit upright. It's almost like a Muay Thai fighter, but boxing. And last night he showed that. He showed that style again. And it was amazing to watch these guys, two guys fight. So let's get into it. I want to work it in out of order. Like round one, two, and three, they were great the way they were synchronized. But it's really round three you want to start with, because it's the lesser round and it's one of the more important rounds. The volume here was closer to about 94, 95 strikes between the two of them. All right, so I didn't go through and separate who threw more strikes on either side and who landed more. What I did was I look at the volume between the two of them, and how I was able to decipher the winner was by certain behaviors. And in round three, they were able to get off about 94, 95 strikes together, and about four to five clinching scenarios, depending on how you look at clinching and wall work. But it was D. Reddick who was doing two things. One, backing Sam up, and two, forcing Sam to shoot in. And let me tell you the difference went between a D. Reddick shot and a Sam Klepak shot. Sam looked like he was shooting to avoid strikes. It wasn't as if he was taking a strategical position to do something different, to make the fight in a different location, have a different complexion to the fight. It looked like he was shooting out of desperation to slow D down. And that's what may have swayed the judges, because his takedowns look more like desperation takedowns. And with D, like I said, moving forward, working the volume, and both men work volume, to be quite honest. But the separation had to be D defending all of those takedowns and moving forward. It just gave a distinct look about round three that you would say D Reddick won that round. Let's go to round two. All right. Let's go to round one. Round one, I was willing to give that round to Sam Claypack. And let me tell you why. Claypack through kicks, Claypack through body shots, Claypack through the punches, Claypack through the knees. He was fighting in more locations. He basically was fighting everywhere. And what D had going for him was the defense, the counter-striking ability, and the ability to move forward. But I did like Claypack's ability to travel up and down the body and land some really good shots that back D up for a minute or two. So definitely round one, I'm willing to give that to Sam. Round two, and going back to round one real quick, the output was about 105 strikes with about five clinching scenarios, which includes some type of clinching, takedown work, or wall work. So you didn't see the classic clean takedown and hold the guy down in a ground and pound position. You saw guys doing a really good job of defending one another's takedowns and getting back up. But one of the biggest differences between Sam's takedowns in round three versus D Reddick's takedowns in round one is that D actually had very good wrestling timing, very good wrestling posture that looked like a guy who was trying to fight in a different location, which is more strategical. It was not him reacting to what Claypack was doing. It was him trying to make the fight in a different position. And so I think you could see that there was a difference. And this would matter in round two. Because in round two, this is the round that these guys really let it all hang out. So they have roughly five or six clinching positions and 132 strikes between two of them. I mean, these guys, this volume. Now, keep in mind, it's three-minute rounds. This average fight, it's three-minute rounds. The numbers I'm talking is normally what you can see in a good championship five-round fight, like in the UFC or something like that. You know, they're hitting these numbers in 180 seconds. That's the best way to look at it. 180 seconds. They're getting off 132 strikes between the two of them. And round two was when both men were going high, low, to the legs, to the body, to the clinch, and also working with some elements of grappling. Yeah, there was a couple accidental low blows, but with the amount of volume that these guys put out, hardly noticeable. And then the attitude of both men was just like waving, oh, no, I'm fine, ref, let's go. I like the strategy from both guys. I tell you why. Because if you give this guy the time off, and you could see that neither guy was going to give the other guy the time off. I mean, you felt like, oh man, that's a breaking point, that I'm almost right there. You didn't want to give them the time off with that amount of volume, because with the amount of volume that both guys were putting out, if you gave them the time off, you would do two things. One, you would let them recover. And two, you would give them the mindset that you're kind of out of this, that you're weakening, and that they would probably spark up and bring even more ferocity. And I think both men were aware of that. And this is really good fight IQ. It's so subtle. By both men in that cage at the time. This is nothing that their coaches can just tell them to do. You know, there's something they got to figure out at the time. And I think it was genius on both men's parts. You got to admit that this isn't a fight where anybody was outclassing anybody. This is definitely a fight where D. Reddick steps up and levels up. And I'm watching this fight going, oh my God. You know, other names have been mentioned about who D. Reddick fights. You know, of course, the general conventionality is, oh, you're just this wrestler, you know, who happens to be training at a good gym or whatever. Man, D. Reddick leveled up. And I know the Paez brothers, I've been big on them. And I'm saying, oh, yeah, D. Reddick and the Paez brothers, that would be fun. Oh, man. I don't know. I'm going to have to see what the Paez brothers do in their next fights on May 11th. Because after that performance, being able to fight another guy who is willing to fight him that way, D. Reddick has leveled up. And the only way that the Paez brothers can win, they need somebody to level up against them the same way. You know, don't get me wrong. I think Jacob had that in Brandon Gasca, but now he's got Q. And I don't know if you paid attention to Q, he has leveled up his game. So if he can get past Q, maybe he stands a chance in there with D. Reddick. But D. Reddick was on another level last night against a guy with so much more experience when it comes to combat sports. And brought the ferocity. He got in D. Reddick's face and D. Reddick gave it back. I'm like, whoa. And when watching a fight like that, right, you know that Sam was ready and you can tell that he's ready. But, you know, there was always those intangible factors. And what are those intangible factors? Okay, so let's say Sam's in the gym and he's looking at this guy who's only got, you know, four fights. And in his mind, he's like, oh, this is going to be easy work. But you don't want to take a guy for granted. So you say, okay, I'm going to come in 2 times ready, 3 times ready, 4 times ready. It doesn't really matter. He can come in 20 times ready. It doesn't matter. And let me explain why. Because he's coming in there to eradicate D. Reddick. He's coming to, you know, put him to sleep in his night. D. Reddick understands this. D. Reddick trains with Keith Rockstar Richardson. Richardson's been around the block a time or two. He understands this. So he understands, okay, you just got to be ready for anything. You know, I remember that Russell Crowe movie in Gladiator when he tells the guys, whatever comes through those gates, you know, just be ready. You know, you have no idea what lions, tigers, or bears or monsters are going to come through those gates. You just got to be ready. And so this is where D. Reddick is. D. Reddick is just ready. You see what I'm saying? But the reason the fight looked the way it did, because Klepek never expected D. Reddick to match him on level 5, level 7, level 8, level 10, level 20. He never expected that. No matter how much he prepares, the problem is that he could possibly have been the most outstanding person in the gym and no one could match him at level 5, 6, 7, 20. But then you had D. Reddick standing in front of you who's able to match. So what happens? Well, you've never gone any further. You've never been higher than this level. You've never breathed any higher air. So then you don't know what to do. And so those were those moments where he was almost in no man's land. Like, I'm out here by myself. I'm kind of swimming on, you know, a piece of board instead of a raft. You know, like, how do I survive? And we saw that in the third round when he started hitting all the shots. In his mind, one or two things happened. And this is how I'm going to try to justify it. In his mind, he may have thought that if he got the takedown, he would seal the victory, or he was really desperate in shooting. We'll never know because the judges gave it to D. Reddick, but he didn't make the right choice, in my opinion. I kind of had the fight before the decision. I did have it kind of in D. Reddick's favor, but it was an outstanding fight. Both men came to fight. Both men gave it their all. Neither guy was really trying to back down. Any backing down that took place was just a matter of the fight. In other words, I have nowhere to move forward. I'm forced to move backwards. I'm forced to reset. I'm forced to regain a new attitude, a new position. And hopefully, whatever I'm doing, I'm hoping that it works. But it didn't in this particular time. And then, like I said, Klepek's nothing to hang your head low about. Incredible athlete. And the problem with fights like this, it's not even so much as a problem. I said this about Gabriel Brown when he took on Paris Artis. And I said, you put that guy in there Gabriel Brown had one pro fight when he met Paris Artis. And I said, you put that guy in there with somebody else closer to his level, regardless of how good they are. And I said, Brown beats them. And look at Brown. He's on a 3-fight win streak. Sam Klepek, you just happen to fight one of those guys that's right there with you, but it elevates you. You've trained in a very fascinating and amazing fashion. I think they said you were only 19 or 20 years old when I looked at stats on the internet. My God, this is what you're doing in 19, 20. Then I'm going to say the same thing with what I said about Gabriel Brown when he took on Paris Artis. I'm like, I'm looking at a guy who might be in the UFC one day or at the highest promotion, whatever is available at that time. I'm looking at a guy who's just finding his wings. He's just learning to grow in his time and his moment, has a tremendous amount of experience, and he's learning from that experience. That the fight he put on last night does nothing but fertilize his championship ground. That's all it does. We just don't know what's going to grow out of that ground. I mean, both guys were amazing. I even said it on a Facebook post to D. Reddick. Had it gone the other way, I still wouldn't have been mad, because it is so rare that you get to see performances from two young athletes at that level. We're talking about, again, championship level. I mean, these guys fought a 3-round fight, and I can measure 5-round fights, pro or amateur, that don't give you this much volume, that don't give you this much output. Best fight of the, on the card, fight of the night, in my opinion. Head kicks were a little lacking, but with so much volume, you really couldn't set anything up. And I thought this was like very intelligent from both men. This wasn't a matter of making the fight ugly. I thought both of these guys fought very intelligently, but they had to fight in a phone booth. And for the most part, that's exactly what they did. Beautiful fight. I've got nothing else on that fight. You know, hit me up if you've got comments, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, now X, YouTube, Messenger, doesn't matter. I thought the fight was a beautiful fight. And actually, honestly, just I've been to Conflict. Don't get me wrong. I've been to Conflict. I've watched Conflict pay-per-views in the past, but it's been a minute. It's been a minute. So I did have a little bit of trouble logging in at first through the desktop for some reason. For some reason, through the desktop, I really couldn't get in. I had to go in through my phone, and then I got the URL through my phone and then plugged it into my desktop. Since I was at home, I'd rather watch it on a large screen than a small mobile. And that was probably the only trouble that I had, because I didn't get the idea of it clicking from the Conflict page over to the Combat Lab page, or I think that's what it's called. But, you know, otherwise, you know, that little hiccup, I fixed it. I caught it. I didn't catch it at first, but I caught it. Took me about an hour, because I started logging in around about 4:30. And so what happened, I just happened to be going through stories, and I saw D. Reddick post the link. And that's how I got on. I even signed up for Conflict 62. Just for the future. So I'm curious. That show was that good that it made me sign up, say, you know what, let me see what 62 is going to be like, because I'm not even sure exactly who's headlining that. Charleston Poole, that's my man. No Charleston from way back, because he fought Devon Blackshear, and I've always been a follower of his. Unfortunate thing that happened to him with his opponent throwing that knee to him while he was down. And Charleston's a warrior. No warrior that I know, no real self-respecting fighter wants to win on a DQ. They just don't want to win that way. You know, Charleston would rather be laid out on the stretcher and know that he gave it his best. That's the kind of warrior he is. But unfortunately, it was, a foul, you know, because it's hard to say accidental. Because once you get a cut that bad and the guy can't move, it'd be different had he, like, say, knocked Charles down and there was no injury, you can continue to fight. But once it's a fight ending sequence, it's probably going to be a DQ, and that's exactly what turned out. I'm trying to think about some of the other fighters. To see Josh Gilliam back on the scene. Who else? Josh Cook. You know, looking at Josh Cook fight, I was like, you know, the beautiful part was he and his opponent were equally skilled and experienced. The difference is there was a difference in skill in one area, and that was definitely the grappling. But I like that because I think that's something that a lot of athletes will overlook. They will overlook the fact that just because a guy has some experience doesn't mean he's improved in all the skills that he should be improving in certain areas. And this is something you should be looking for. And that's what I watched about D. Reddick's fight. Could D. Reddick have honestly improved in one area of his game, which was his striking? Could he walk in there against Claypack, who potentially has about, I couldn't even tell you because I've seen so many of his kickboxes, so much of his MMA, but I'm leaning toward closer to 14, 15 fights. Could a guy with one third the experience, could he match him? And D. Reddick did. He did, honestly, landed some really good shots himself, worked the strategy left to right, high and low, up against the cage, countered in the middle. His defense was pretty good. I was kind of like thrown off a little bit by the commentator saying, oh, D. Reddick can't just stand there and cover up that way. But I don't think they understood. Like, he wasn't really just covering up, eating shots. You saw that in one of the earlier fights where the guy covered up and got beat up. But in D's case, he was covering, looking through his guard, countering, and then taking over. And to me, those were the moments that won the fight. I don't think he was losing the rounds in the first round because he was covering up. I just thought it because Sam was just doing so much work. You know, D did a lot of work too. You know, like I said, there's 105 strikes between the two men collectively. It was just, you could almost split those numbers down the middle. Nonetheless, great show, great fight. Look forward to seeing more in the future. Look forward to learning some of these new gym names and more about these impressive athletes. I am Coach Sess, and you've had words with the Mad Coach.